Pittsburgh section, Oral History 2. This is Shirley Stolzer along with Judy Ross interviewing Mrs. Gertrude Kaplan on this Monday morning, March 23rd, 1992, in her apartment where we were before. Mrs. Kaplan, would you again state your name and address?
Yes, Mrs. Stolzer. I'm Gertrude F. Kaplan at 552 North Neville Street, Pittsburgh 15213.
Thank you. I want to start this morning by asking you, Gertie, to tell us a little bit about your participation in Women's Plea for Sylvia Jewell.
Oh, thank you. When this became a national event, the process of bringing it to local communities evolved in this fashion. Individual women's organizations were asked to become the convener. And the first year of this event, the National Council of Jewish Women was indeed asked to convene the Women's Plea, and they asked me to chair the event. We did it really on a quite massive scale. I remember a feeling that it was significant enough to involve the entire community, which means racially and religiously. And we reached out to the Negro women and to the entire Christian community. And we had some very nice response. This took a great deal of advanced planning, and I felt that because this was coming in this large kind of event, citywide event, that it had to be extraordinary in its programming also. And I tend to look for that which is dramatic when you have to make a statement immediately and you have to do it in a broad way. I was fortunate that I had so many community connections because a book of poems and letters from Russian Jewish women had just been published. And somehow this had been called to our attention, Voices of Russian Jewish Women. And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to recreate this in a dramatic program, which is exactly what we did. I went to Ginger Greenwald and some of the other very well-known semi-professional women in the city, Rebecca Frankel, Frida Alber, all of them with professional dramatic training. And I can't remember one or two others. And Ginger and I sort of produced this. We collated and extrapolated from that book the variety of emotional letters and poems. And it was a very unique and very meaningful program. In addition to which, now that I'm thinking back, Lordy, I haven't thought about this since I can't remember when. A 13-year-old Russian Jewish violin prodigy had just come to Pittsburgh. Her name was Ellen Ginsberg, who became, I think, a student at Juilliard. In fact, our scholarship program aided her there. Geknipt and gebinden, if you know what that expression is, the community intertwines and yes. Interrelates. And Ellen became our guest soloist that day. We met at Temple. We had this event at Rhoda Sheldon Temple. And we felt that in keeping, if I'm recalling correctly, yes, I think this was it, in keeping with the somberness of the theme and the impact of the message, because indeed Jews were very incarcerated then in Russia, in the Soviet Union, we would do, and we did indeed, a prisoner of conscience luncheon. And we had chunks of brown bread and a weakened kind of borscht and tea and not too much else, maybe to compensate in the fact that we were doing this for the community. We had something sweet. I'm not so sure we did because there was nothing sweet about the message. Mm-hmm. And that was the first women's plea for human rights for Soviet Jewry. Now, you
and that was through National Council?
Well, we were the conveners.
Okay. But were there other organizations participating?
Oh, as the convener, we used every Pittsburgh Conference of Jewish Women's Organization.
About
and
when
they,
did you say that was?
Trying to think if that was in the late 60s or the early 70s. Probably in that period of time. The plea then became, the women's was scratched from it. As the National Conference of Soviet Jewry, did you know this?
No.
As the National Conference evolved, we recognized the fact that this was a men and women's plea. And so the word women's plea was dropped. It became the plea, and it became an evening event, if I recall.
Right.
And the other organizations in the city, Hadassah took its turn, B'nai B'rith took its turn, it came around again to council, and this went on, I think, as a formal national program until the breakthrough.
Right.
I don't believe we have this program now.
No. Mm-hmm. Now, you acted as chairman of the event. What was your role?
I was the chair.
And what
I was the
you
chairman.
Were the chair.
I was the chairman. I had been appointed by council to do that chairmanship.
What did you see as the purpose of this? What did you see yourself accomplishing?
It was tremendous in impact in the city. You see, so many of our Jewish causes are, and understandably, responded to by the Jewish community. Here was an opportunity to respond by the entire community. And I recall the Ukrainian community saying, this is interesting because I just went to a Nationality Room program Saturday to present the Israel Heritage Room scholarship to our recipient. And the Ukrainian Room is the newest Nationality Room. Tangentially, I mentioned this in Pittsburgh. But the Ukrainian community felt that it too was being repressed in Russia, as were many other religious groups during that period, ethnic groups, exactly. So what we were doing was calling attention to this, Save Soviet Jewry on the faces of our synagogues and temples wasn't an immediate thing. It took a great deal of this kind of pressure and repetition. It wasn't fashionable at the beginning, if you'll forgive me. And I must say that the Pittsburgh Conference of Soviet Jewry, and this I'm glad I recalled this, became an arm, if you will, under CRC. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
CRC. As it enfolds the Rabbinic Fellowship, for instance, and as it enfolds the Shaliach, who comes from Israel, also was the professional staff arm under which the Pittsburgh Conference of Soviet Jewry functioned. And I was a chair of that for a while. I was a vice chair of it and then became the chair. Oh, that goes back a while.
Yes, yes.
I had forgotten.
But it was something that drew people together.
Well, it drew people together. It called attention to the plight.
Mm-hmm.
It opened the advocacy. It was a form of advocacy that then became political, obviously, and reached out. I have never stopped writing to congressmen and senators. They know my name quite well. From an official capacity as chair of CRC and as an individual. I have consistently felt that we have to continue to, all of us have to continue to convey our opinions, our feelings, our judgments to our elected officials.
I just wondered that when you assumed the chair initially, and it was a new idea even though we were
it had meaning for me. My
that's
roots
what I'm
were,
trying to find out.
I may have alluded to the fact that my father came from the from Kiev, a small town near Kiev in the Ukraine, and I may have mentioned to you the deep feeling I had for the paternal great uncle, my father's uncle, who lived with us briefly before his death, who came to this country after seeing his wife and only child killed by the in a pogrom by the cavalry of the Russian soldiers,
so
the Tsarist regime. So it really hit home. I was, I think, always, well, you know, I may have mentioned to you that that there was much Jewish culture and Jewish life in our home, and that I was involved as a child in this, in Jewish music and so forth. So that this was a certainly a meaningful opportunity for me.
Good. So you really were wanting to do this kind of
thing. Jumped at the chairmanship.
Good.
As I did when they asked me to chair the 30th anniversary celebration of Israel in this city. I don't know if I ever talked about
that. Well, I was going to ask you next. That I also know you were active in regard to Israel. I know Israel Bonds gave you the Golda Meir Award.
Oh, yes.
So now you can tell us a little bit.
Well,
it's
Thank you. My first big communal job for directly for fundraising was as chair of the Women's Division of Federation's campaign. I was trying to remember. I was campaign chairman before I became president of Women's Division. That makes sense. But
of
Women's Division of the United Jewish Federation. But I guess I have been a fundraiser. I think that of all the 7,000 or how many cards there are in the Women's Division, I probably have covered all of them somewhere. The girls come to me and say, what's the history on this, Gert?
Mm-hmm.
And I do, it's interesting when you know the community,
right.
You know, in the depth and breadth that I've had the exposure to it. The fundraising arm was very important, and I'll never forget when the Six-Day War occurred. That the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, I just the second recalled this, in fact, the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra was coming to America very spontaneously on a fundraising tour. They came to Pittsburgh, and in 48 hours, Joe Nacht, whose name you may know in connection with Pittsburgh Public Theater, very, very capable, bright lady in community, Joan Apt and I were asked by the America Israel Cultural Foundation, which was briefly a dominant cultural organization in Pittsburgh. The late Donald Steinfurst. Do you remember Donald?
Of course. He moved
the late Donald Steinfurst, who was the very knowledgeable musicologist and music reviewer for the Post Gazette. And Maestro Steinberg.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Maestro Steinberg was very involved in the American Israel Cultural Foundation. Because, you know, he was the leader of the Israel Philharmonic, for the conductor for so many years, and it was partly his influence that brought AICF into existence. Isaac Stern, we consider the Sterns among our friends. Isaac Stern has been in the forefront of that organization. And Cy Rosen, Seymour Rosen, was then the executive managing director of the symphony. And this was before Paul's and my connection with him. But AICF came into existence with a strong local chapter. And we were then, I was certainly a Federation person, but at the same time I was in the cultural world to a certain extent through many different, as you know, organizations and institutions. So it was natural for them to ask me to co-chair this event. We sold out the Syria Mosque in 48 hours. We had, now, Inbal, when I talk about selling out the Syria Mosque, Inbal, which is a, I don't know that it exists anymore, I-M-B-A-L, a Yemenite woman, Sarah Levi Tanai, had the farsightedness and the understanding that Israel, too, in itself, it was a sort of a melting pot of a diversity of Jews with a diversity of backgrounds. She created this dance company, this folk dance company, and they came to Pittsburgh under the auspices of AICF. On a bitter, wintry January weekend, I shall never forget, this group came in. I was chair of that event at the Syria Mosque. To sell that out was like pulling teeth.
Really?
Well, people aren't that crazy about folk dance. And this unknown, modest folk dance group came from Israel. And
during the war period?
No, this was later.
Oh, I see.
This was later. Excuse me, I was just going on from AICF.
That may have made some of the difference.
It may have, but it didn't. Anything that comes during the war period gets the emotional
exactly.
response. This was just part of a national tour. And they came to us in the winter, as I say, from, I think, from Minneapolis or New York. No, they were going to Minneapolis, came from New York. They were exhausted, they were sick, they needed a doctor, they needed a dentist, they needed tender, loving care. And it was interesting that I was able, within a short period of time, to get them to a dentist, to get them to Paul, to find all kinds, that they needed, a rehearsal space. And I was involved with Pittsburgh Dance Council. So I was able to get them a place to rehearse before their performance. Oh, yes, I remember all this now, but it was. And we had a lovely event, a reception afterwards, on Beachwood Boulevard at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Gerald Balch. That home was eventually sold to the Chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh, Dan Litchfield. That became the Litchfield House. But it was a lovely, and I think now the Masons live in it, Myrna and Mark Mason. But that was a lovely home on Beachwood Boulevard. But in the dead of winter, a difficult home because it has a tremendous approach of steps and a large drive. And it was a sheet of ice. It was so difficult. And I marvel at the devotion of those people who were involved with AICF to come to the reception afterwards, because we wouldn't disappoint these lovely people who had performed that night. I received mail from Mrs. Tanai for many years after that. She said to me, nobody in the country did what Pittsburgh did for us. And please look me up. She's deceased, I believe. Please look me up when you come to Israel. And we really did plunge in with genuine Pittsburgh hospitality.
So your connection with Israel initially was through
fundraising.
Fundraising for UJF.
Uh-huh.
How about ZOA? You were also in ZOA?
Well, my award, I belonged to ZOA. I was not active in ZOA. My award to ZOA came in 1978, was it? As a community leadership award.
I see.
Uh-huh. And of course, that was a recognition of all the varieties of things. At that point, I had already become a salesperson in Israel Bonds. I'm still on that board. I have sold a lot of bonds.
That's good.
And chaired many of their events. I never took the chairmanship of the women's division there, but I was their sponsor chairman, which was like an advance gifts chairman, for many years. And I did the first, I chaired the first evening, men and women's evening fashion show with Jerome Lieber. Jerome Lieber and I chaired the men and women's evening fashion show. You know, the fashions come from Israel, and that's been a traditional fundraising event in the women's division. But in an attempt to raise more money and involve the men, we did that very successfully, I might add. It was a very successful event. I chaired the event for Israel Bonds with Harold Gondelman, honoring the late Helen Oringer as one of our women of valor. Forgot about that till the other day. I've been behind the scenes with Women's Division and Israel Bonds for years.
When was the Golden Meir?
The Golden Meir Award. 88 or 89.
Not too long ago.
The Emanuel split. Oh wait, excuse me.
Sure.
Community leadership of ZOA was in 1978. The Spectre Award was in 1980.
Golly.
Social Assistance from Orange was in 1974.
The Golden Meir Award was, I think, 88.
Mm-hmm.
88. Forgive me for being
what
vague.
What was it really What was the basis of that award?
They did not have a, every year the Israel Bond Organization has a Man of the Year.
Uh-huh.
And that year they did not have a Man of the Year, and they felt I was their Woman of the Year, but they were initiating a division of Israel Bonds called the Golda Meir Division,
mm-hmm.
Which recognizes women who in their own names purchase $5,000 or more in Israel Bonds annually.
Oh,
and with the creation of that division, they created, actually I have the plaque for that in my bedroom,
mm-hmm.
forgive me for being so vague on the date.
That's all right.
They created the Golda Meir Award. You know that Golda Meir was the actual mother of Israel Bonds.
Oh, she initiated?
Uh-huh. She came to this country early in her career. Do you remember that?
I've read about that.
Yes. And she traveled the country meeting with Jewish leadership, male Jewish leadership, indicating that that it was important for the infrastructure of the country, not just that we give our charity dollars, which we do for through Federation, mm-hmm. but that we have an investment which can return and does indeed return an investment. Mm-hmm. And she was successful beyond her wildest dreams in that first trip to this country. That, I think, was right after the War of Independence in 48. And I was so honored. That made me tremendous. Actually, I was reluctant. I must tell you, I was reluctant to accept the award because it came on the heels of another award. And I thought, gee, enough already. And I had great reluctance because I loved doing what I was doing and I didn't feel I needed the recognition. Bonds does this, and in the long run, I guess you have to respect the fact that people come out for people whom they know.
That's right.
People bought bonds in my honor, I'm proud and humble to say, who've never bought a bond, maybe before, maybe mm-hmm. since. But this is what happens, and I didn't say yes until Alice Pierce, the wife of Jan Pierce, called me.
Oh,
I must confess, she applied pressure. And she recalled having met me at an AICF function. Whether she did recall or not, she said she did. It was very lovely of her. And we had a wonderful conversation, and she was perfectly beautiful. And she said to me, look, Bert, we talked to her. Oh, and by the way, the letter came from Roberta Peters inviting me to become the honoree. This came out of National.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those are very heartwarming,
yes,
impressive communications.
Beautiful.
And Mrs. Pierce said to me, yet she was dear. She said, Gertrude, I must call you Gertrude. Somebody is going to have this award. Why shouldn't it be the first person we ask
right.
whom we want?
Good. Very good. Tell me, you probably have gone to Israel a number of times.
Five times.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And have you gone as a mission or
yes.
out of you and your husband's desire to?
Our first trip was a mission in 67. And you know that was right after
yes,
the war. 67. Our second trip was a wonderful trip that we took with our older daughter and her husband. We actually joined them. They were going with the New England mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1971. And we participated with them, though we were not so rigid about doing all the things that missions do.
Yes.
Our next trip was, oh, wait a minute, I have to tell you, we took my parents to Israel for their 50th wedding anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, let's see, they were married in 20, so that was 70.
Mm-hmm.
I might be giving you false dates.
That's right.
Then we went again in the end of 70, and then in 85, we were going with our grandsons, all of our family. Our younger daughter
mm-hmm.
wasn't married yet. And my mother was December of 85, was this,
mm-hmm.
or December of 84. My mother was very ill.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go, but Paul went
mm-hmm.
with the children. And
mm-hmm.
I'm ready to go back. I haven't been there since then, and it's more than due for me to go back. I may go with my younger daughter, who's extremely committed and very active.
In terms of all your activity for Israel here,
yeah.
were you also wined and dined by the heads in Israel?
The missions have wonderful opportunities to meet with the leadership. And one of my most proud possessions is the picture with Chaim Herzog, who was the ambassador to the UN and the speaker the year I won the Community Leadership Award.
I see.
He was in the presidency, I think, on one of our trips. We were not singled out. As a mission group and as VIPs, you do really get to meet with the absolutely with the prime ministers, with the heads of state, with the we would hear from Ariel Sharon, we would hear from in his day Rabin. We certainly had lovely opportunities to meet with the medical people at Hadassah, Hadassah Hospital. And I have, in fact, I was just going over some pictures, and I have some pictures of us in the wonderful building where the Chagall windows are. You're aware of what I'm speaking of. We really, when we went to Masada the first time, which was, I guess, 67, there still was no funicular, so we climbed it. And we had just wonderful experiences. I remember meeting with a couple of the players in the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra who had been Pittsburgh Symphony players whom we looked at. But actually, not to the extent that we were wined and dined on our symphony trips, let me be honest with you.
Good. All right, now, that your connections in terms of Israel, did that bring you to participate in the Israel room at the University of Pittsburgh?
I think that anything that has been a part of community involvement in Israel, I have just naturally been a part of. Every committee, every part. As I started to say, when the 30th anniversary celebration was being contemplated and Federation said, will you chair it, they never dreamed the extent to which I dug into that. Instead of one function, we had seven. I had a wonderful committee representing the whole spectrum of Jewish involvement in the city. We had a gala evening at Carnegie Music Hall at which the B'nai Israel Youth Choir sang. We had, I got horns involved, and they did a fashion show of Begador leathers.
Yes.
We had a photographic exhibit, and I got all the photographers in the city involved. Donald Robinson helped me with that. It just was such a multitude of opportunity, again, to make it ecumenical.
Yes.
Again, to make the non-Jewish community aware of what we were doing, that this little valiant country had survived at that point. This is 78, 30 years against so many wars and odds and enemies. I think I met a wonderful cross-section of younger leadership that really wasn't necessarily Federation leadership then. At that time, Ellen Toker was the PR woman for the Carnegie Museum and Library, and Ellen, who is a very bright young woman, you know her through Community Day School, was on my committee. Roz Rosenblatt was on my committee. She was then the superintendent of the Beth Shalom Sunday School. She went on to work for Federation, and now she is in charge of the foundation program at Pittsburgh Play Class. And we've retained our connections. The Roskies, Ralph and Dolores Roskie, were part of that group. It was just, again, reaching out and involving the whole community. And we had a marvelous series of celebrations.
Tell me, with all that involvement that you had, how has it affected your children? Have they been inspired to
do
more?
Committed.
Have they been turned off because
Mama was so busy? I've been very lucky. I know that some youngsters have followed a negative route. When I'm really very fortunate.
How did you manage it?
Well, as you gather, I have a lot of energy. I used to say that I had two lives, that my second day began at 3:30 when the girls came home. My first day began at 6:30 a.m., and I still, to this day, do a great deal between 7 and 8 a.m.
I'm sure.
both on the phone and in my own, at my own desk, my own communication. It means nothing to me. People used to say, you've been to town three times today. It means nothing to me to run to a meeting, to conduct a meeting, to get home and, when the kids were younger, pick them up and do the traditional chauffeur service, especially Robbie was always going to dance classes mm-hmm. and to for rehearsals. She was very involved as a child in mm-hmm. theater. And, well, as a matter of fact, Donna was on the Debate Society. I did my stint with the PTAs. Mm-hmm. And they learned that I was a good chauffeur because I had a large station wagon. I could take the whole Altergeist debate team on its debates. And then when they learned that I was a high school English teacher, I could become a judge at the debates. So that became a dual accomplishment. And it would never matter to me how many meetings or what we had to do. And I'm grateful that I had the kind of physical and, I think, mental capacity. Mm-hmm. I think being this busy is a habit. Mm-hmm. And as a child, I was always very involved. Every hour mattered and every hour counted. Mm-hmm. And I carried this into my adulthood. Mm-hmm. And my husband's a busy, productive individual.